Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 5th of April. Very nice to have you with us on this chilly morning, but a very nice morning, but meaning sunny and beautiful and bright and another day that we get to live and enjoy, but, you know, chilly. Let me introduce our panel to you, or at least those who have shown up, and then we'll get to those who will show up, and then
those have shown up.
All right, now everyone is accounted for. Excellent. WAMC's Alan Chartak is here. Good morning, sir.
Yo.
Oh, you sound great.
I have it, and I'm therefore in an undisclosed location where I will not spread my germs to you guys.
Well, for that, we thank you. That's very nice. Let me also introduce Rosemary Armeo, who's been hanging out in the green room for the last half hour. She got here. No. How are you?
I'm great.
Excellent. Good to see you. And, of course, University at Albany journalism professor, investigative reporter, and Mike Spain is with us as well. He's the associate editor of the Times Union, and it's a great pleasure to have you.
Thank you, and good morning.
Well. Good morning. All right. So let's get going. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we welcome your letters and... We mean it.
We love your letters.
We love your letters. Let's go to what's happening in the world. Of course, today is the day of the Wisconsin primary, which there are many in the media who are saying that this is make or break. There are many in the media who are saying that this is one of the most important contests that we have seen thus far. And there are many in the media who believe that we will know a lot more tonight than we did this morning. And... Rosemary Armeo is not one of those people.
Yeah, I'm a naysayer, and I know Mike is going to disagree, and he's really smart, so it makes me nervous to disagree. But I think this is a media invention. We've heard Iowa is so important and New Hampshire was. I think Wisconsin is important in the same way. It's one contest today, so there's a lot of attention on it. I think that Trump may lose, but he's lost other states. He isn't going to have one loss and three victories the way he has. I don't think this is going to move very much. I think Cruz would like it to. I think that's the narrative he's painting, and we in the media love conflict, and so we're building it up. I don't think it's there.
You don't think there's any value to the momentum, especially in the Democrats, if Bernie Sanders were to win six out of the last seven
Bernie
primaries.
Has to win all of them by a spread of 12 points or more.
Oh, you're
I can
doing
see
the
him
math,
winning
I see.
More. Yeah, I am doing the math, which is what Bernie should have done a long time ago. Obama did it, and he beat Hillary. Hillary's now learned that lesson, and Donald Trump, who portrays himself as a big organizer and a great thinker, probably never thought he'd get this far, but he never bothered to look at the math of it. And the truth is, he may not get the 1237, but I don't think he's going to be shut out because of whatever happens tonight in Wisconsin.
Well, if Donald Trump goes to the convention in July without 1237,
right,
that really does create a possibility,
correct,
that he will not get the nomination.
Correct. A writer in the Washington Post, I know what it looks like, but I don't know how to say it. Roz Duthit, is that how you say his name? You know who I'm talking about. Very smart thinker. And he said he never believed this whole idea that Trump was inevitable. And so that now the election is being stolen from him. He said he only recently was saying, yeah, Trump is probably going to get it. And he's saying now still, it's still above, more probably yes than no, he'll get the nomination. But it was never overwhelming. We in the media do that all the time. Like now in New York, we're hearing Hillary used to have a lead of 25% and now it's down to 10. Well, you always have big leads before the electioning begins.
I want to bring Alan into this conversation, but you know, it was E.J. Dionne also in the Washington Post made that point of that we in the media tend to say what is happening now will be a constant for the coming
weeks.
And it's not. Alan, what do you make of it?
Well, look, let's assume they get into a brokered convention. I'm sorry for my voice, but let's assume they get into a
brokered... The Republicans or the Democrats, Alan? Who are we talking about?
The Republicans. Republicans I'm talking about. Let's assume they get into a brokered convention and they, as the word I think you used is rob, or somebody used it, rob, Trump.
Yeah, he portrays
well,
it
of
that
his
way.
Thing. Mm-hmm. That is the end. That's the end. I mean, you know, they can't make up for all those people who voted for Trump. And but on the other hand, I think it isn't the media who's done this. I think it's Trump who's done it. This last faux pas has been terrible. I mean, really awful. And about women and abortion, that's on him. It's not on the media. They jumped on it, of course, but it's not their fault. Rosemary, I have some sad news for you. One letter after another has taken you to task for your anti-Bernie-ness.
I'm not anti-Bernie. I'm pro-Hillary, and there's a difference there. And if Hillary doesn't get it, I'm voting for Bernie. How many of the writers would say the same?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of mail, one of which was really, really long, and of course, I'll never read it, from somebody named Eric. But Bernie or bust, there is reason here. Bernie or bust movement is because people are sick and tired of the banks controlling our politicians. And it seems like Hillary Clinton and her supporters can't see this, and it goes on and on and on, and so that's enough.
Yeah, I forwarded it to Rosemary. She can respond to it.
Thank you. I love
that.
Love
your
letters.
I know you enjoy that. Yes.
Love your letters, yeah.
Okay, so yesterday we talked on this program about John Kasich, and we talked about how Donald Trump was saying over the weekend that Kasich has to drop out. He has to drop out. He's taking votes away from me. That's not fair. He has to drop out. Well, yesterday, Ted Cruz comes in and starts to make the same claims that it is destructive. It's destroying the party. It is disingenuous, and that he, if Ted Cruz were to lose Wisconsin, it is on John Kasich. They really are, and a good deal, from my understanding, a good deal of the attack ads and the money that Ted Cruz has put into Wisconsin is going not only after Trump, but a lot of it's going after Kasich as well. So,
and you can see Joe, why people in the Senate hate Cruz's guts. Because he's really becomes a snake in stuff like this. It is Kasich's absolute right to stay into the end. If you get a brokered convention, which is of course what Cruz is looking for, then you have a real good chance that Kasich, who appeals to middle class voters, could take it. And that's the last thing that this guy Cruz wants to see happen.
Well, there is some irony in the fact that Kasich has only won a single primary, and Cruz points out if you're going to win the nomination and you're going to win the presidency, you got to start winning some primaries. And at this point, he's being billed by his two opponents, both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, as the spoiler. And yet, there was a survey, you know, one of those surveys or a snapshot. They're not science or anything like that and solid. But about a week ago, that had Kasich up against Bernie and he would lose, but Kasich up against Hillary and he would win. So some people think Kasich may be the best chance for Republicans to capture the White House.
Well, we're also hearing the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, may be waiting in the wings and a secret weapon of the party elite. I love the mentality of the losers. If you remember, I was saying Michael O'Malley should leave, you know, weeks, months before he actually
Martin
did.
Martin O'Malley.
Call him Martin O'Malley.
Unmemorable Martin O'Malley.
Yeah, that loser. And so what was he thinking? I said, what would he gain by staying in the race? Of course, you're absolutely right. He has a complete right to do it. I know that, blah, blah, blah. But why would he stay on and take the constant beating? I still don't get it with O'Malley. But with Kasich, I think he's had talks that went better with the Republican National Committee than Donald Trump's did. And I think he has some hope of pulling this off.
And his point, I'm sorry, Mike, but his point is, I do believe Kasich's point is valid, which is, okay, you keep on saying that I'm not going to get the 1237. Well, you're not either.
Yeah.
You know, and that is, I mean, it's a point. So obviously they're going to come closer. And then he says, that question comes into play. Yes, but then who has the best chance of at the convention of beating the Democrat in the general election?
And you see, my argument has always been, if you want to win this contest, you play by the rules. You have accepted them. Kasich has looked at the rules, unlike Trump up to now. And
that's right.
why
the, the, these are the rules.
Right. Everything changes once you get to that convention. Now,
a political party can set it up the way they like. They're not bound by law. And these, after the first ballot, those delegates to the Republican National Convention are no longer bound. Right. And they can do the expedient thing. And there was a report yesterday that in Huffington Post that the Koch brothers are ready to come in big time behind Ryan if his name gets dropped in there. So, yes. You know, there's a lot going on.
Well, that money certainly worked for Jeb Bush.
Right.
We'll see what happens. Let's go one more.
Joe, just one letter from Kyle who says, just wanted to let Rosemary know I respect her for sticking to her guns and supporting Hillary. Haters gonna hate. Says, and then Peter, speaking about haters gonna hate, even after Alan is gone, I believe he will still be on, meaning dead, I believe he will still be on the round table from a remote and undisclosed location.
And he'll sound about the way you sound today.
That's funny.
So Mr. Cruz is saying that the people would quite rightly revolt if party leaders tried to elevate anyone other than Mr. Cruz or Mr. Trump at a contested convention in July. And that was what Ted Cruz was saying yesterday. I don't think we know that, do we? I mean, I think that's the great unknown because the Republican establishment, the party, they don't like him. They don't like Trump. So,
well, if you look at some of the interviews that the networks and the cable channels have done with people at Cruz rallies. I saw one the other day where the guy says, well, I don't really like him that much, but I'm here to see what he says because he's like
the
all
best
I got.
Choice.
You know?
Yeah.
If you give them somebody like Paul Ryan, a bright new face, or Kasich, who is regarded as a broad moderate, you know, maybe they'll vote for him.
And the best news yesterday, Alan, was that we're going to have another debate. Hillary and Bernie are debating
right.
in Brooklyn.
The birthplace of Bernie.
That's right. Hometown.
Well, you know, just getting back to that one, if tonight goes well for Bernie, which it's expected to do, I think even Hillary has kind of given up on it. She's not going to Wisconsin
she's
tonight.
Here she's here and not
she's
there.
She's been here, right, all several days. And he has that momentum. And then he comes to New York, and he starts having 10,000 people show up all over New York. It will create a momentum that could things have happened like that. And if he does well in the debate, it could be very,
well, it
very
even happened
helpful.
To Hillary before in 2008.
Yes, it did.
So
it happened
I
in 2008.
I can't rule that out.
And I'm sure they're worried about it. And that's why she was in the Capital Region yesterday. And it looked so nostalgic to see her standing there with Paul Tonko and Kirsten Gillibrand and local officials. And, you know, she really wants to remind people she was the senator from New York and mm-hmm. she knows everybody and everybody knows her name, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be an interesting 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. We are, in a moment, we're going to go to a break. Alan, you want to do the letters? Or do you want
to? Oh, yeah. Okay. So Matt says, I was at a Clinton rally at Cohosas High School last night, and while waiting in the freezing cold, I talked for a bit with several of the Bernie supporters there protesting. Not one of them would commit to supporting Clinton if she were the nominee. And there's more, but I'm only going to read that much because we're getting a lot of letters about that now. And now we have there's a groundswell for Rosemary. Rosemary is right, has it right. The Republican elites are praying for a brokered convention, betting that they can convince Ryan or some other mainstream poll to don the mantle of the nominee. Any current rules that require a candidate has to have won a certain number of states or delegates will be changed when the Rules Committee meets. And Ethan says, a dear roundtable, I heard Bill Clinton in Wisconsin campaigning for Hillary while she has a big fundraiser back east. My question is, will Bill Clinton hold up lines as he did in Massachusetts so people can't vote? The Secretary of the Commonwealth is mentioned in the Boston Globe had to remind Clinton that what he was doing was illegal. Or will the DNC change some Democrats' voters' affiliation? You know, I'm interested in that, what somebody, I think Rosemary said, and that is that if, in fact, it isn't only the second ballot. a lot of these places have delegates who are supposed to be committed but can do what they want on the first ballot. And if the Republicans are really, the establishment really wants Trump out of there, they could well pull the plug on him using those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Ryan may be the greatest statistician of them all. He stayed out of that big melee when there were 17 candidates and comes in and glides in at the last minute. That would be,
gets in, right?
Yeah, it would be, oh, no, I don't want it. I don't want that. Yeah, I would love to see it, actually, just for the fun of the drama of it.
We are just about out of time for this break, and we will come back and talk more about this and other topics. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Let us go to a couple of other issues, and let's actually go to Mike's story, which I think is an interesting one from the Times Union, having to do with the controversial statewide testing in New York that starts today.
That's right. You remember last year these tests, these assessment tests to for third graders and eighth graders and across New York State were boycotted by many people, like one in five, so about 20% boycotted it because they were opposed to the Common Core standards. They were objecting to the fact that teachers were unprepared to teach this new higher standard, this new not new curriculum, but new higher standards. I guess they had flexibility on how they taught it. And then there was the added political problem that Governor Cuomo insisted that a teacher would be rated 50% on the performance of their students on these tests. So this curriculum rolls out. Teachers are uncertain how to teach it. It's rough from the beginning. Now they're going to be judged 50% on how the students do on it. And there was a movement to boycott it, and it was called the opt-out movement. I think that Rob Astorino even had a political party, you know, named or a political line when he was running, you know, opt-out. And it was very effective in some districts. One in Schenectady County, the Mahanison district, I think it was the Mahanison district, but a Schenectady County district had like 60% of the students opted out, and their parents would agree. But so there's been a big campaign by both the opt-out group to continue that, and there's a group that supports the higher standards, and they've been battling back and forth the rhetoric in the last few weeks. One of the arguments that one of the parents told me I thought was interesting. Kids are coming and saying, well, you know, Joey or Johnny is getting to opt out. Do I have to take these tests? And they say, you sure do. And it's creating this like double standard. The other significant change over last year is that Marianne Elia is the new commissioner for education in New York. And she has gone around the state right away. She's only been here 8 months. She went everywhere and listened to parents, listened to teachers and administrators. And it no longer will be used to evaluate teachers. So the most onerous part of it is out. Teachers are also saying they've been doing it a few years and they're starting to get the rhythm of the new higher standards and they can teach it better. And they've made the test shorter. There's a little debate about how much shorter. Some the opponents say it's only slightly shorter. But they're going to give kids as much time as they need and take the pressure off. And she, you know, even the opt-out, well, the opt-out people are predicting it'll continue and it'll grow. Even the high standards people feel it's a momentum going for opting out, and they expect more people to opt out this year. But Commissioner Elia said yesterday when she was at the Times Union for an editorial board that she's not sure. She said she's talked to a lot of people, and she's hoping that we'll see people participating again. And the value of all this, Joe, is that they need the data to hone the curriculum and hone the programs, and they need it to demonstrate that they're meeting the standards. This, if too many people opt out at one point, it could jeopardize federal money coming into the districts. So there's a vested interest in the education institution of getting parents to trust it again and letting their kids take the tests. It doesn't help the kids to miss a test because they're going to have to take SATs and all these other exams when they get on to high school. So, you know, getting them used to testing isn't so bad.
Alan, what do you make of it?
Well, you know, I don't like teaching to the test. I'm married to an educationalist who is furious about the whole thing, so my view is somewhat colored. But I can say that they blew it. And the governor, who was all for it in the beginning, is not, because he got bitten, and he got particularly bitten by the teachers, who were furious that this is being used to potentially fire them. I can't find a teacher who has told me that they like Cuomo anymore. But the unions feel they've won a great victory here and are, you know, basically saying, okay, now we can live with the governor. That's for a good reason.
It's interesting. The New York State United Teachers, the powerful union that represents most of New York's teachers, hasn't really endorsed the changes in the standardized testing, and they're not urging people, you know, they're sort of neutral on it, and their support could go a long way towards ending the opt-out or minimizing the opt-out effort. So it'll be interesting. It'll take several weeks for these tests to be completed and to know the level of people who have chosen to pull their kids out of these tests, and that will speak volumes about how successful the new commissioner has been in listening to people and making changes.
You want in, Rosemary?
No.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Alan.
Letter. Social from Jack. Social engineering of students of color were performing at level of white students, but there was still a group of underperforming white students. There would not have been any talk of students to begin with. I don't know what that means. I don't think I like it, but I'm sure it was meant well. And what can I say?
Are we sure of that?
Yeah, are we sure of that? Look, they all took, here's a cautionary tale. They all took tail and ran. They turned tail and ran. Everybody was for it. The Republicans were for it. The Democrats, the neo-Democrats, they were all for it. People stood up and said, we don't like it, we don't want it. And all of a sudden, there's nobody to be found who wants it. Now, Mike, you mentioned the new excellent commissioner of education going around and listening. I think it was all determined. And I think, frankly, she was probably picked on the basis of the idea that she would not be pushing this thing because the governor had enough.
Well, there's a lot of complicated overlay of issues here. And certainly many people say that they want higher standards. They want New York's students, when they come out of high school, to be prepared for either college or the workforce. And it's clear that they're not. And across the country, people surveyed definitely want higher standards. It's going about delivering those higher standards where you start to get into trouble. And when tests are being used, when the test scores are being used to evaluate teachers or to appraise whether a school is meeting its obligations, people get pretty nervous about it. And it can also play into how much funding a school might get. And yet, without testing, really, do you? I mean, you got to have accountability. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Well, Daniel says in response, teachers spend 180 days a year teaching, testing, and grading and evaluating our children. But we need a test for the state to determine what's going on? Interesting. Yeah, I think, frankly, the whole thing began in New York because the governor had decided that he was going to stand on the shoulders of the teachers and say, you know, this stuff that we get all the time. You know how I feel. The teachers are our best asset. But there was talk about, you know, do they teach are they in the classroom enough? So that when the governor started it, obviously, it was an attempt to stand on the shoulders of the teachers. I don't have any question about that. And people really resented that.
Well, we'll know, like I said, in a few weeks, whether the fact that it's been depoliticized, the governor is no longer using the test scores to evaluate teachers or pushing for that, and now it should stand on its own, and we'll wait and see.
Let us take a break. We will come back. We will go on to other subjects, and we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from H. Houst & Son True Value Woodstock. Since 1932, offering organic and heirloom vegetable, flower seeds, and seed starting supplies, True Value behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com. The Stafford Owens Law Firm, advising North Country and Canadian clients in matters of cross-border trade and business law, PlattsburghLawyers.net. And Atelier Rene Fine Framing Red Hook, custom picture framing in a studio setting, personalized service, archival framing materials and methods, AtelierReneFineFraming.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let's talk about the Supreme Court for a moment. They have rejected the conservative challenge to one person, one vote, a unanimous ruling Monday that states may satisfy one person, one vote rules by drawing election district based on the total population of a place. A defeat for conservative interests that wanted the districts based only on the number of people eligible to vote. Evanville versus Abbott was considered one of the most important on voting rights this term, and a decision the other way would have shifted political power away from urban areas where Democrats usually dominate and toward more Republican-friendly rural areas. What do you make of this Supreme Court decision?
Well, it was unanimous, which is rare in our Supreme Court these days. But this isn't the end of it. What they did was said, we're going to keep using the measure we've used for decades and decades, which is total population. After all, the Constitution is based on ruling and governance for all of the people, not just those who vote. However, we're open to discussing some other ideas later when we have like 9 justices. So we haven't heard the last of this. Good for now.
Yeah, just to explain this, there are all kinds of people who are not eligible to vote, children or criminals who are behind bars.
Immigrants.
Or immigrants who don't have citizenry, and people who just are not...
deadbeats.
They haven't registered to vote.
Right.
Right. So in some cases, some people wanted them not to be counted, and they only wanted the redistricting based on those who are eligible to vote. And the court at least has stood behind that. But they are going to bring it up again, as you point out. I love
the Hispanics were especially affected by this.
That's right.
They would their influence is in cities. They tends to be a Democratic vote in cities. But if you were gonna pick districts based on who actually votes,
you wouldn't count the Hispanics who were not enrolled.
You would, in effect, be giving more influence to rural areas.
Yeah, and Justice.
You, in fact, Rosemary, make a very good point. Remember that Alito and Thomas, of course, voted clearly with the majority. But if you read the particular dissents that they wrote, you wouldn't be so sure. That they were, as you point out, that they were on the side of the gods on this one.
Right. Well, just to correct slightly, they didn't write dissents. They wrote separate consents. But they
put in, exactly.
They put in all of these caveats like, well, this works. It's definitely constitutional. We've always used it. But we might be open in the future to looking at different ways of counting.
Yeah, we'll
some
see this
areas.
One again.
Yeah, this one's going to come back. I think the justices wanted to come out with a unanimous decision.
Let's vote on something unanimous.
Yeah, because it makes them look like they're still working, even though they're, all tangled up 4-4 on everything important.
And it was nice.
Well, the Constitution and the 14th Amendment make it pretty clear that they were right. This was a tough one to overturn.
They had Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the smartest woman in the world, write the consent, and she said, "This is good enough for now." I love that. You know, we'll stick with this for now, and that's good enough.
I don't know how much we have talked on the show. I know we talked a little bit about the budget. I don't know how much we've talked actually about the $15 minimum wage in both New York and California. And I wanted to...
The war. Who was first?
Yes, the war. This is I sent a piece to our panelists last night from the Los Angeles Times. Thank you very much. Anyone unconvinced about a New York-California rivalry had some tough evidence to overcome Monday as both states moved to enact minimum wage hikes to $15 an hour, the highest in the country within hours of one another, about the same time as California's sweeping new minimum wage was being signed into law. Hillary Clinton was taking the stage with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, celebrating the state's freshly minted law, one Cuomo proudly touted as a first in the nation. Okay, so it doesn't matter who was first. It is the state law that is very similar in both states. That it comes in over a fairly long period of time
till 2022. But the significant difference in California is that it covers all of California. There are no geographic divides. The way New York's rolls out is that Westchester has a different rollout and Long Island, and then the rest of the state has a different rollout than does New York City, which begins to feel the effects of it more quickly. And it would make sense to do that. That the argument has been that upstate is a whole different economy. The cost of living is very different upstate, and New York City needs something as soon as possible. But a lot of people were disappointed in New York. They thought it didn't go into effect soon enough, and they were disappointed that there were these exceptions made for upstate New York and for farm workers and different classifications. And now they're talking about some kind of tax credit for small businesses in New York. California had that, too. It wouldn't kick in if you had a very small company, like 10 employees or so, right away. So it's sort of dueling $15 an hour wage bills. Governor Jerry Brown in California, who's been amazing out there, he has put the state's budget back in balance after it had been out of balance for years, and he's proved to be a very effective leader in getting both sides of the legislature to support him on a lot of tough measures that have
He's been a really effective governor. Yeah. I agree with
and
you
even
on that.
In dealing with the drought crisis.
That's right. And he's been out in front. He's the governor that a lot of people thought he could be many, many years ago, and he's kind of matured the second time around.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Both bills seem defective to me, and yet, on the other hand, this is a massive amount of state spending at a time when states don't have that much money and want to keep taxes low. So I completely object to the way our governor goes about passing a budget. It's done too quick, in secret. It's terrible, a terrible process. And yet I'm not so sure that his bill is a lesser bill or a worse bill than what California came out with. There is a huge divide in the economy of New York City versus the rest of the state. Not so much in California. It's expensive everywhere in California.
Right, that's true.
You know, so doesn't it make sense the way
pass,
we did it?
But if you're going to pass a bill and you're going to say it's going to take 6 years in some places to implement, it's a phony.
Then you don't like either bill, because they both are taking six years.
Let's put it this way. I don't like the way it was done here.
We're, I think, unanimous about the process.
And when somebody stands up and gives a rocky salute, you know, with Hillary holding up their hands, the governor and Hillary, and saying, "We won. We 6 years. In 6 years, as I've been saying all along, as Mario used to say, a new pope could be born." And this is a bunch of baloney, because the Republicans said nothing doing, and the governor rolled over on this one. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think that's right. I think the Republicans are not happy about it, and yet he did pass the bill 6 years, as I say, for this amount of money and this economy. For both these giant states to do that sets the pattern for the whole country.
Yeah, it'll drive wages up everywhere eventually, but very slowly, not fast enough.
Yeah. Right.
And I was trying to find this, but what are the assurances in place that it will not affect the staffing of the employment rates at individual places?
Well, there was a lot of competing studies, and that all came out. And small businesses could be really hurt, but how many people are employed in those versus people who really will be advanced by this? And there's no real way of knowing. If you give a lot of money to more people, won't they spend more in the small businesses?
Well, the economists say that.
Every cent of this will
go back right into the local economy. Right.
But if you're a business that has six people that you're now paying $13 or $12, that you now have pay 50 or 9 or 10,
and
now you have to pay
15.
Yeah. So then, do you need six people, or do I now pare it down to four? What assurances are there in place for those workers that won't be the case?
There are not assurances.
None.
It's more of an act of faith that the economy will improve and there'll be some level of inflation and that this kind of a thing can be absorbed. But one of the complaints that some people have is that the businesses have is that this may make it financially feasible to do something they have resisted, and that is have an entire robotic McDonald's, let's say, you know, where you just go in, push a button on a screen and swipe your credit card and you walk over and there's like two people working back there while the machines do all the two special sauce buns, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the other is, Joe, the impact on human services agencies that depend on government funding. There is some vague language that they should be made whole if they have to raise their wages, because if they don't, if they're dependent on the government for funding, you know, they're a daycare program or there's some kind of other human service program that pays $12, $13 an hour, it will mean a drop in human services resources available to the community, and the government needs to step up there. Even cafeteria workers at school districts are going to be affected by this, and they're going to have to find a way without hitting the tax cap that the state puts them under to pay minimum wage to their employees.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of angst as this rolls out over the next few years.
Yeah, it makes sense to me that there's a long phase-in period. It's extremely complicated, and the studies don't completely guarantee the results that may or may not happen.
So let me ask. Alan, do you remember when you were a kid what the minimum wage was?
I don't know. When I used to babysit, it was a 75 cents an hour.
So it was $3.35 when I was a kid. Do you remember what it was?
I don't remember.
It was in the twos. I don't know where, but when I was in
so we've come a long way.
$15 is nice compared to
that. I mean, obviously, the economy
is. It is, it's still a struggle for a family.
But look what a Coca-Cola was. Look what a Coca-Cola was.
That's right. Right. A lot has changed.
For me.
or your daily newspaper.
Yeah, that too.
I would like to say that the price of a newspaper has not gone up equal to that of inflation. You know, it's.
I did want to get Jamie's letter in. He said, "I agree with Alan." That was important. Once again, our governor has managed to make much ado about nothing besides $15 an hour being too little now. By the time anything takes effect, they will find a way to take it back. And no one ever closes their doors because employees' wages are too high. Show me one example. When people make more money, they can spend more money. That's what James said.
Well, yeah, that's true as far as it goes. But the truth is New York and California are in better shape than workers in Kentucky or Illinois, where no minimum wage bill, an increase bill, was passed.
No.
Yeah. Well, Henry Ford doubled the salary of his assembly line workers, enabling them to become his customers.
Right.
So it does, the economics do work out sometimes.
We have.
He was also a scurrilous anti-Semite.
Trump. Yes, I know. There are people who are flawed who have done significant things in other areas.
All right. I was
going to go. Bill Cosby when you say that.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking Woodrow Wilson when I said that.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Yeah. Benedict Arnold.
And in the news. Okay, so with that, we are out of time. I want to thank everybody who wrote letters, and you can continue to do so. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, feel better.
Thank you very much. I'll try.
Okay. You know, do all the things that people will tell you to do. I'm sure you're getting a lot of recipes for various things to gargle with, so good luck with that.
Right.
Rosemary, thank you very much. And Mike, always good to see you. We'll talk soon. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.